Okay, you're back with the Mystery Train, Horse Lips, 1972. Happy to meet, Sorry to Part, the first album. Let's do a quick history here. 1974, The Town. 77, The Boogaloo Invasions. And then those albums that followed, Aliens, The Man Who Built America, and so on. And in 1980, The Belfast Gigs, which at the point they made that record, they'd already decided to split up after a long, long time, being the Irish band, the pioneering Irish band, the band who did it first and the band who did it from home. There was a long-running legal dispute over ownership of the material, and in 1994 that was settled in Horslip's favour, and immediately they remastered the entire back catalogue and released it on Edsel Records. That's where the Mystery Train came in, because at that point the band assembled, I think for the very first time together in public, outside the courtroom that is, and came in here for a chat. And at that stage they weren't playing. I said, if you're going to ever play sometime, please come back. After a while, they did a gig at the Orchard Gallery in Derry. A special exhibition of Horslip's memorabilia was staged there. And then in July and August and September, they recorded the new album, Roll Back. They did that in Grouse Lodge, strangely enough, in a place called Horseleap in County Westmeath. That album was released in December of last year. And, well, we did. We got them in. And I have to say, Horslip's were the first band I ever saw, first real band. At Jamborora, 1977. Anybody else who was in the Boy Scouts may have been there. Apart from girls, they were about all I thought about for a long, long time. An extraordinary band, a very important band to me. So you can imagine what it was like for me to be surrounded by Horslips in the studio here in RTE. Because even though I know some of them, work with Jim and so on, they were a more important band to me than the Beatles were, or the Stones were, or anybody. And I've met all sorts of people in my time. But as you can tell from this this first question, the way I put it so badly, I was a little freaked.
Right, lads, I'm not going to go through the whole how you got together again and why you got together and so on, but if we could just ask at the start, how does it feel? Because Barry in particular, I think you look 30 years younger. There's a smile across your face, which doesn't leave.
I'm going into surgery later to have that removed.
You're really enjoying this, aren't you?
Yes, brilliant. And they've got the bass turned down low, so the mistakes don't sound quite as glaring as normal. Yeah, it's brilliant. It's brilliant to be back and not kind of have any pressure.
But is the pressure starting to build a bit? Because you started all this quite cautiously and bit by bit by bit by bit. And now maybe people's expectations are starting to increase too, you know?
Well, I doubt that. They've heard us. I mean, the expectations.
And now, who would like to answer that question?
Yes, pressure. A lot of pressure.
Is the pressure starting to develop?
Tons of pressure.
I think it's starting to develop.
Headaches, hangovers, pressure, that sort of thing. Yeah, there is. There's a lot of expectations. But, you know, we'll let them down again. We don't mind.
Was there a worry, actually? I mean, I would imagine, you know, maybe the worry would be that when you get up and play that you discover that you aren't as good as you used to be, or you were never as good as you thought you were, or, you know, you weren't as good as people thought you were. You know, lots of possibilities there.
I think we're all better.
Part of it is that the stuff we've been playing is kind of different. Yeah. And so you kind of... We haven't started playing the stuff we used to play the way we used to play it yet. We might get what they call in County Tyrone a gunk at that stage, but for now, that, you know, the stuff we did in the album is really I think it's translated. It's really nice to play. I think it's a kind of triumph of old age and cunning over youth and enthusiasm. And so it's just a lot of fun to play.
A lot of people think the new stuff sounds better, actually. Does that come as a pleasure or a slight disappointment in some way, that, you know what I mean, that why did you do it like that the first time, you know?
I've had people that have heard this album and haven't heard the original stuff and like it, and they've gone back to the original stuff and go, I like the new one. You're right. Yeah. I don't know.
Plus, times change, you know. Yeah. I mean, it's a different time. We were different people, and it's, you know, the whole musical landscape's different, so it's not that surprising, yeah? Although it is kind of surprising.
That was Jim. Just in case people are wondering,
in case people thought it was Barry who was being incoherent.
So, lads, what about a piece of music? And at the end of it, I'll try and be coherent myself. What are you going to do first?
The Man Who Built America.
And in German?
Yeah. Der Mann, der Amerika gebaut hat.
Or something like that.
See him driving those golden names that hold together that silver bond. that one day gonna take us to the stars. 'Cause he's the man who built America. See him walk in the golden mile, a million miles from his starting place, and see the world reflected in his face. 'Cause he's the man who built America. When he builds your dreams, tell me who's gonna knock them down. If he fills up your dreams, tell me who's gonna knock them down. Not him, not the man who built America. In every precinct a golden mine, in every doorway stands heart's desire. But see him crouching, running through the fire, 'cause he's the man who built America. He killed the rich and he caught the poor. He stopped the streets with a 45. But no one's gonna take the man alive, 'cause he's the man who built America. When he builds a dream, tell me who's gonna knock him down. If he fills up your dream, tell me who's gonna knock him down. Not him, not the man who built America. Driving those golden names that hold together the silver bar, that one day gonna take us to the stars. 'Cause he's the man who built America. When he builds a dream, tell me who's gonna knock him down. If he fills up your dream, tell me who's gonna knock him down.
Man Who Built America. Thanks. Extraordinary hearing that again. What's the reaction been like from you know, people like me who, you know, were so devoted to Horslips in a slightly dangerous way for a lot of their years? People must be kind of losing themselves with excitement at the thought of you boys being back together again.
Well, let's start with you, John.
Well, I'm supposed to be interviewing you guys, and I don't know where to start. Because it throws up so much, you know. How do you feel about them, Johnny? You're singing a lot on this record too.
Yeah, it's nice for me to songs like Trouble, you know, where it was always a full on with the riff and the a rock thing, you know. Yeah. But it always had a bluesy feel. So to give it an acoustic treatment and a slightly slower, you know, with a bit of bottleneck, a bit of slide.
It works great, but again, it's a brave thing to do because that riff is so, like, it's everybody's favourite riff, you know?
Yeah, and it was taking a bit of a risk, maybe, taking the riff out and putting in a simplified version of it.
One of the nice things about doing it this way is that because we threw on, you know, the kitchen sink in Horslips production and the old albums and a supermarket trolley on top just for good measure, there was a tendency to assume that, you know, that they were just, like, fast vehicles for Celtic instrumentation. And in fact, one of the nice things about this is that certain of them are revealed as actually being good songs. That someone like Honorable America or Trouble with the Capital T, I think Trouble, it just makes a great blues song. Yeah. So it's kind of nice for us to go, you know, underneath all that kind of glitter and flutes and harps and everything, there were actually a bunch of songs masquerading, which you can now listen to. And
this is my fault now. I was burying all that good stuff. Thank you.
Well, we didn't. That, by the way, was Jim admitting.
It was Jim Hammond. Jim Hammond was very.
What Barry's trying to say is it's nice to learn how to play them after so long.
Hey, that was Charles.
Eamon, is Eamon mic'd up down the back there? Eamon, you've been kind of analysing the whole rock scene ever since, you know, in your newspaper columns and so on. Did you think it was wise? You know, did you kind of say, oh, hang on, guys, now let's look at the times here, or did you even think about that?
No, it certainly would have been unwise to sort of don platform boots and flared pants and shamrock bass guitars and all that sort of carry on. I'm wearing a bra, actually, and you know, suspenders, but I'm in the booth here. Yeah, so that would have been a bit silly. But this is just, I suppose, it's what people call unplugged, or the Stones would call stripped, or whatever you want. So yeah. It's pared down, and it befits sort of men of a certain age, I think.
do you miss the full on rock thing? I think what I'm getting to is, are you ever going to do it again? The full on.
I'm still in shock, and I'm auditioning for the Thrills next week. So
take that as a possible.
As a possibility. We haven't tried it yet.
And Charles, what have you been up to? Because you know we know what these lads have been doing. Because you know, well, I work with one of them and so on. But what have you been doing? All sorts of things.
I dabbled in pornography for a while in London. Photography, design, been doing albums, been playing, doing session work, and enjoying. Play a lot more acoustic stuff, which is good, you know.
And that sort of featured quite prominently on the album as well.
Yes, very much so.
Your own thing, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Without intention initially, but a lot of tunes came about just because we were playing them in the place. Very relaxed atmosphere, nice studio.
What was the first song you played when you came together for the first time again?
Furniture, I think.
It was Furniture.
It was Furniture. It was when we did the rehearsals for Derry, before we went up to Derry. We did it. It was the old way. I mean, it was an acoustic version of the old style of doing it. So yeah. I started off just playing the flute riff, da 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 da, and then Johnny just came in behind me, and I got I swear to God, I got a shiver up the back of my neck. It was just weird. Whew.
Well, they'd been rehearsing a bit while I was in England, and I got the strange feeling when we were rehearsing recently. Just I turned around and saw them all on stage, and it was a bit. I hadn't looked at it before, you know, hadn't taken that long look, and thought, shit. They're there.
That's funny that Charles says that, because when you were kind of young when we started this, and so you suddenly you find yourself in a band that's kind of happening very fast, and you really don't have time to look and reflect at what's happened or whatever, and then you're in a bus with four people who have become your life for 10 years, and I think maybe for every one of us to actually be back together again, and kind of it's fun for us asking ourselves the question that you just asked. What's it like to be in the Horselips again? And it's really interesting. We didn't think we'd ever do this, and it's great doing it.
Well, you mentioned Furniture. Is that a possibility?
Yeah,
absolutely.
The full 55-minute long version.
Yeah, now this might be shorter than that. Yeah. 53. Solid as a chair from an older time. You watch me slowly grow away from you. Only half understood the things I had to do. But you let me try, although it brought the pain to you. You let me try. You let me try. The best and oldest furniture cannot be rearranged. If it suits the way it is, there is no need to change. The best and straightest arrow is the one that will range. Out of the archer's view. Thank you.
troubles you'd had to bear. You invested everything you had in me, hoping I would hoist your flag for all to see. But I broke the things you cherished so carefully. You watched them break. You watched them break. The best and oldest furniture cannot be rearranged. If it suits the way it is, there is no need to change. The best and straightest arrow is the one that will range. Out of the archers, you. The best and straightest arrow is the one.
Now, give me the rest of it now, come on. Okay, let's talk a bit about the Irish element that was in the music and is still in, on the new album, and yet in some cases isn't on the new album. Charles, you kind of joked about it earlier on as being kind of, Jim was sprinkling all sorts of mad nonsense all over the music, but like it was the heart of what you were at, and I'd be curious in your own background in traditional music, because people would know the pipes and so on, but you'd like Northumbrian pipes and all sorts of mad stuff.
Yeah, we used to play silly stuff. Well, look, we started off doing quite a few Northumbrian tunes on Northeastern songs as well. I think the only folk songs we sang were a couple of Geordie songs.
We did Stonehenge.
Stonehenge. Yeah, my background was always like an Irish based background. Middlesbrough was more Irish people there than in Dublin.
Yeah.
And I used to do sessions, used to play English folk, Irish folk. And that was one of the reasons for coming here when I started working here. There's a choice of Philips, working, designing for Philips in Holland or coming here. So I was swayed. Yeah.
I mean, all that stuff, for instance, on Drive the Cold Winter Away, the Manx and stuff like that.
Yeah, that was Jimmy's influence. Yeah, he's a little bit of Manx in him.
I'm trying to remember how all that came about. I think it was just research and stuff and just finding tunes that hadn't been hackneyed and hadn't been kind of done to death. And discovering in the course of that there was all this other wealth of things out there, you know.
Were you all interested in this area, you know, or was there any one of you going, you know, what are we at here? Let's just play rock and roll songs. You know, was it a shared interest?
First gig I ever saw was the Silver Star Cayley Band in Loch Raymer's Farmer's Ballroom in Vergenie, County Cavan. And it was my grandfather's Cayley Band. And they won awards. He was a great box player, and they won all sorts of fashion and so on and so forth. But Briony Finnegan and Davy Butler and people in the band. I would have been maybe, what, 5 or 6?
Yeah.
But tunes like King of the Fairies and The Boys of Blue Hill and all that stuff, that's what they were doing.
Sure.
So, I mean, that was the stuff that we had at home in our house.
Mm.
And then,
Johnny,
of course, then we got Luxembourg.
Yeah.
And then that was it.
That was the end of that.
That was the end of that.
And Devlin came down from Loch Ness with all these northern songs, like with all the Geordie, what's-his-name songs. And
Geordie Hannah.
The Bumby Under a Polish Box.
Ollie Allen stuff. Price folk songs.
Right.
Simon Smith and his amazing dancing.
And, of course, Johnny, you know, even though you were the axeman in the band, you were also a banjo player long before that, and you played with Ted Fury and these guys.
Yeah, I was doing sessions before I joined the band. I was for about a year I was playing sessions down in County Clare with Ted Fury. Yeah, it was wonderful because I was sort of learning the banjo at that stage, tenor banjo, and I was picking up a lot of nice Clare tunes. We used to go to a lot of sessions. Liz Doon and Doolin, and there was Mike and Packy Russell, who were great players, you know, and so it was, for me it was really fantastic.
Yeah.
That was about a year before, yeah.
There's actually a rare archive footage of Johnny playing the banjo in, where is it, Johnny? Lister?
No, actually, it's on O'Connell Street in Limerick. As a matter of fact, I thought it was completely lost, gone forever.
Did you ever sit down like Sam Phillips did, you know, in Sun Studios and say, if I take a bit of this and a bit of that and put it together, I'm going to have a hit? Did you do that with the music, consciously, you know?
Did Sam?
Well, I don't know if Sam did, but did you do it?
No, not at all. The music was very varied when we started off as well, you know. And the trad stuff we brought with us was interesting baggage.
The Clergy's Lamentation, that we always thought that was going to be number one.
Yeah, that was really hippie stuff.
Legendarily say that if he could find a white boy who could sing like a black man, he could have a hit? Our equivalent would have been if we could find a traditional fiddler who could play like Albert Lee. Yeah. I mean, and I can tell you, it doesn't work at all.
Yeah. Never did.
There was, obviously a lot of people lapped this up, but did you genuinely get stick from people? I mean, did you genuinely get musicians? And Johnny, you were probably still hanging around with the musicians who would have been looking down their nose at what you were at.
Yeah, there were a lot of diehards that...
I don't remember anyone confronting us with that.
No, there was no... no.
You're still ruining it, you know. Yeah. But there was talk that the chieftains didn't like us.
I know that there was a few people who...
That was just jealousy over the hair.
Yeah.
There was a few people who would have been seriously critical of all this messing around, but they would have been seen as purists even within traditional circles. And in fact, people, the likes of the wonderful Kieran McMahona, was like very supportive. And, you know, an awful lot of open-mindedness within the tradition. And there still is, you know. I mean, there's a good spectrum of conservatism versus radicalism. And you kind of need that because you need somebody kind of preserving the pure drop, but you also need people pushing the boundaries a bit, you know.
Well, I remember talking to somebody once and I said, look, if I hadn't heard Horselips, I would never have heard Mrs. Crotty or anything.
There's a lot of Irish kids who were introduced back to traditional music. It was dead on its feet, I think, for a long time. And Seán Éireadh was the only one to sort of give it a kick and do the same sort of thing, you know, revitalise it.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of kids were interested in the fact that they knew the tunes as well when we went down there, but it was different.
Yeah. It's hard to think back into how much it had kind of waned, because like towards the end of the 50s, before O'Riordan came along, it was no serious interest in it. There was very few pipers left. You know, it's hard to imagine that now because there's like pipers in Philadelphia and there's pipers in Sweden, and Dunhu's is full of little Japanese women sawing away at the fiddle. You know? I swear to God, it is.
I think that's the fiddle.
So the next number, actually, Charles, where's the cat?
Yeah.
The tradition, even though the riff from Trouble and so on has gone and all that kind of thing, there's still a very strong traditional element on this record. In fact, maybe even more so than there was in the past.
I think you're right. Yeah.
So nice tune. Tell us about this tune.
This tune I've known for a long, long time. We used to mess with all sorts of tunes, and there was tons of tunes that didn't get used in our repertoire. You know, we'd stack them to one side and go, let's try this one, try that one, and record a little bit of them. That's one I've been playing for a long time. It's a single jig, really nice single jig, but played on guitar, it's got a new slant. Sounds nice.
Okay. Have you guys been all... I know Johnny has been playing a lot, but have the rest of you been keeping up with your instruments? I mean, Eamon, you Now, I don't think you touched the drum kit from the day you put it away.
I got to play two tunes at a wedding, a cousin's wedding, about 2 or 3 years ago. That was about the height of it, to be perfectly honest, yeah.
Did you have a drum kit when it came to it?
I still don't.
You still don't have one?
This drum kit belongs to Miles Lally from Skerries.
And, you know, did it take a bit of getting used to again, or is it like riding a bike?
Oddly enough, it didn't. You know, probably listeners can tell, but nonetheless, I mean, it didn't. No, it was just a bit like riding a bike.
And what about you, Barry? I mean, were you playing bass guitar at home on your own? Can't imagine.
No, it is just a lonely and solitary sin playing bass guitar. You actually have to, playing bass guitar to your family, you have to take it to a bishop to confess. But I played acoustic guitar and I got, coming back to bass was great. And I'm enjoying it. I'm playing different. I played with a pick on stage because Johnny was always incredibly loud and the only way I could hear myself was banging with a pick. Now that he's playing acoustic, I can play finger style. It's lovely to do it that way.
How did you learn bass, Barry, or from whom, or you know, who were you influenced by? Because I'll tell you, when I was in little bands at school, I could never work out what your bass lines were, you know.
Me neither.
But I couldn't, you know, I found it very hard to mimic what you were doing, you know.
Yeah, well, unless you actually hear what somebody's playing on bass anyway, it's quite hard. Mm. But I had an unconventional schooling in that I was learning the bass as we were, and as many people will tell you, as we were playing our early gigs. I was the rhythm guitarist in the original Horslips lineup, and we had a bass player called Gene Mulvaney, who was a really nice geezer, and he was a friend of Eamon's from Trim, or Kells. And I could spot that there wasn't much future in a world where Jimi Hendrix was in the ascendant for a rhythm guitarist. And so bass seemed to be the step. And Johnny helped me, and Charles, Jim, pretty much everybody helped me by going, learn the shagging thing.
And Charles, in the intervening years, you've been doing a lot. I mean, you make your own records and do solo performances.
I write a lot of instrumental stuff. Yeah. I've never stopped playing. I love it.
And do you kind of tour on a kind of a circuit there, like a folk circuit or something?
No,
I did
for a while, and I stopped touring because I didn't like playing live very much. You know?
I wasn't at the Belfast gig, but the story was you chucked the fiddle into the crowd. Did that happen?
The last gig, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't the last gig. I'm not quite sure. I broke it first so everyone would get a bit, because I just imagined what would happen if it went in its entirety into the crowd.
Yeah.
There's still rumours of bits of it still hanging around Donegal. It'd be nice to see it. You know?
And Jim, obviously you're working in RTE, but do you have all the keyboard set up at home and...
Yeah, I mean, I've always had a keyboard of some sort, and I play piano a good bit at home, and I got into playing low whistle a couple of years ago. I don't play that much flute. I kind of take down the flute every couple of months and kind of play it for a couple of weeks and then put it away again. But mostly I just play piano.
Because that's one thing I think, you know, I would like to have heard on the new record, more of you spitting into that flute.
Didn't really seem to fit. I mean, I tried it in a good few tracks, and it didn't gel with the kind of feel of this album. The album was kind of angled in a different way, and it didn't sit with it. Anytime I think I tried it on, it just felt wrong.
Yeah. So it was like a production decision rather than...
Yeah, pretty much,
And what about pipes? Do you ever play pipes now?
No, I haven't played pipes now. I was pretty useless on pipes, to be honest. I mean, it was an interesting experiment, and it was great to get the sound of it in, but I wasn't a serious piper. I mean, I wasn't a real piper, yeah.
And Johnny, when you're doing your gigs, I mean, you must be pestered for people shouting out for trouble and Jarrick Doom and all the time, like.
It happened, non-stop, yeah. And funnily enough, it happened like when I played in London as well. I was living in London for 15 years, and almost like at every gig you would either get a request for trouble or for Jarrick Doom. It's great. And it's been happening over here as well, since I moved back and started gigging in Ireland, you know.
Extraordinary. Well, I suppose there's some of the most famous riffs around, aren't they?
They
really are. Now, the next number is Mad Pat, but I think that's going to be Charles. So we can bingo and have a cup of tea.
See you in 10 minutes.
2, 3, 4. A jester riddler, a joker, a singer songs. In every town he passed, he'd stop to help the dancing master entertain his straw roof throng. And from a green cloth on his back, he'd take his fiddle and some goodbye snow. Now singing high, now murmuring low, now in the middle, and the people would know. Everybody would know. Mad Paddy's gone back on the road. A wire string fiddle is his only load. He's kicking up tough everywhere he goes, and he's on his own.
the houses, all the people, they stare at his horse lips and his emerald green hair. He keeps on moving, he just doesn't care when he's on his own. Mad Pat's on the road. Slow, slow as a fare to drive away your cares and bring a magic sleep. And then the pace will quicken, you'll burst out of your slumber and find yourself up on your feet. And then his magic show will change to something strange, there's something wrong, what's going on? And through the tears you cry, you sigh, you feel like dying, cause the fiddler's gone. Mad Paddy's moving on. Mad Paddy's gone back on the road, and a wire string fiddle is his only load. He's kicking up turf everywhere he goes, and he's on his own. In the corner there's a smile on his face, his fancy is taking him to some distant place. The tunes keep changing, he can't keep the pace, and he's on his own. Mad Pat's on the road. Wire string fiddle is his only load. He's kicking up turf everywhere he goes, and he's on his own. In the corner there's a smile on his face, his fancy is taking him to some distant place. The tunes keep changing, he can't keep the pace, and he's on his own. Mad Pat's on the road.
Right, so let's indulge now, if you don't mind, in some nostalgia. I'm going to ask you about two things. Jamborora, 77. What do you have any recollection, any of you, of that gig? It was probably your biggest gig. There was 10,000 people at it.
Rain on stage. Pelton right in against the front of the stage.
Was
to the
that?
Point where, yeah, do you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
It was dangerous.
Vibrant, bright, blue, sunny day.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Thousands of naked girls.
Really?
Was that somewhere else?
No, I wasn't at that one, no.
No,
that was Bundoran you're thinking of. No, but
there's a story about a pigeon, John, that you heard.
Yes, the story is that a pigeon flew past your speakers and disintegrated.
Patently a music lover.
Seriously, yeah. But it was quite bizarre, wasn't it, like playing to 10,000 Boy Scouts.
And the Holy Ghost.
It was
a wonderful gig, actually. It was a great gig. I think for a lot of the kids who were there, it would have been one of their first sort of meetings with a rock band in a field.
Barry has said to me in the past that you spent a lot of your time on the road advising young fellas to do their homework and do their exams. And were you as innocent as Barry would sometimes suggest?
I remember when we told Lemmy to go on a diet, on a fitness regime, and we said, look, Lemmy, if you follow our instructions, you'll still be doing this when you're 60.
Well, it's done to him, didn't it?
It did indeed.
Yeah. Presumably, though, a lot of the people that you would have been playing to in these venues, a percentage of them weren't there specifically to hear Horsecliffe, at least at the start. They just were there for a night out, and suddenly you guys...
Oh, we got rid of them pretty quickly.
That percentage did drop. Like, I mean, one of the things about it is, you know, that people say, oh, you played the ballrooms, but in fact, we just played a big space which happened to be a ballroom. By the end, basically, promoters would know that the kids they got for the gig we were there would never show up again till we came back. I mean, and I think they'd probably be quite happy about that, because the mineral bar would get wrecked. As well as hurling themselves over the counter and pogo dancing on top of the Kerry creams.
And how did you travel in those days? What was your... Did you have a lorry or a bus or cars or...
Car and van, a couple of trucks.
Car for band, yeah, truck, big black truck for the year.
Yeah, with a big black truck with a fist on the front of it.
A white van for the lights and...
And we travel in a Range Rover.
Would you have done it like the show bands and travelled home that night, every night, no matter where you were, or would you have stayed?
Depends on how good the hotels were. There were some really nice hotels. that we stayed at, that we made an effort to get to and drove hundreds of miles to get to, if it had a pool table or a swimming pool or anything.
So nice it was a pleasant enough time, because sometimes when you hear the guys just before you talking about it, it sounds awful, you know?
A lot of it was really grim. Well, some of the dressing rooms were awful, you know, the cold in the middle of winter.
It was probably a mixture of both.
And did you miss it when you stopped? I mean, did you really miss it? Because it must have been really in your bones at that stage.
Yeah, it was a bit...
Of course, you didn't stop. You kept going, Rick. You really kept going.
Yeah. And Eamon and I... formed as an Alligators, and that was going for about 2 years. But it was still a shock, you know, it was still a shock, like when the band stopped, you know, stopped playing.
Well, one of the things is that people kind of don't entirely know so much about was that in sort of mid-January, we'd head off to the States. We'd head off to the States via Europe. We'd come back in May and we'd do a ballroom tour for the summer. And in September, like the Swallows, we'd be off again. We'd do America right through the fall and maybe come back to Britain for... the tour up to the 1st of December. I mean, I like touring Ireland, and I kind of tried to treat it as a foreign country. So instead of just going to Ballyhonis, you'd be going to somewhere that was called Ballyhonis. That was quite interesting. But in America, it was genuinely all strange and wonderful to us, you know.
How important was that side of it, Eamon? Because you guys, you know, you read books and you're interested in the places you visited and so on. You weren't just, schlepping around the place. That must have made it more of a pleasure.
Well, oddly enough, I mean, the summer of what was it, 72, was the after the first couple of singles. That was bizarre. I mean, we were travelling around in a purple transit van that was had previously been owned by Ashton, Gardner and Dyke. And it was purple, and there was the legacy, if you like, of some sort of psychedelic scene going on and alienating audiences. And the first journey we made was to Wexford, and it seemed to take maybe about 3 days to get there. In fact, it was probably only about 2 hours, but it was an inordinate amount of time for fellas who'd never left home before, you know. Then a few years later, obviously, then Germany happened and then America happened. And yeah, America was sexy because you were visiting radio stations, studios. I mean, you know, playing a gig, which we did, a radio gig in Sigma Sound Studios in Philadelphia was intriguing. So all of that stuff, yeah, it was all good fun and great anorak stuff for lads like me, you know. And, so I sit at home in the evenings now and I flick through my scrapbooks and sort of, you know, I look at the old photographs and think,
It's extraordinary when you see old stuff. That thing Jim showed me once of a gig you did with Queen. And it was like Queen... What was it?
It was Queen 30p, Horslips 40p. Yeah.
Well, listen, one of the numbers that everybody wants you to do and you've recorded again is Trouble. Tell us about the origin of that. It was Brian Boru's march originally, wasn't it? The introduction to Trouble, anyway.
Yes, yeah. The riff, which I sort of played around with for a little while on the guitar. I kind of broke up the tune and used the first part of the tune. I just thought it would make a really, really good riff on guitar. And lo and behold.
The riff isn't in this new version of the song, so that's a brave step.
I worried about it for a night or two and I said, oh my God, you know, I mean, how am I going to... But yeah, I just, because of the sort of bluesy feel to the song, I wanted to simplify the riff and use it as a slide riff instead of the original riff. And so that's how it came about.
Okay, I can't believe I'm saying this, but here's Horslips in Trouble with a capital T.
1, 2...
Stands a boat, but are they gods or real folk? Can't see the fire, but we smell the smoke. We take the plow, we'll be the yoke. Light up the man that don't believe. We are the ones you won't deceive. Not a thing we do is cheap, cause we belong and we won't leave. Trouble. I try to chase trouble, but it's chasing me. Trouble with a capital T. Lay down yourself father and your gold. I am a man who can't be sold, and even when my heart grows cold, I curse your evil stranglehold. The waves are riding much too high, it's got so dark you can't see the sky. But the change is coming by and by, a time to laugh, a time to die. Trouble, trouble, I try to chase trouble, but it's chasing me. Trouble, trouble, trouble with a capital T. I almost made this place my own. Now it seems I'll soon be gone, moving on and all alone. High on a mountain stands a boat, but all they got's a real boat. Can't see the fire, but can smell the smoke. We take the block, we'll be the young. Trouble, trouble, I try to chase trouble, but it's chasing me. Trouble, trouble, trouble with a capital T. Trouble, trouble, I try to chase trouble, but it's chasing me. Trouble, trouble, trouble with a capital T.
So let's cut to the chase, gentlemen. What's going to become of this Horslips reunion? How far will it go? How far do you want it to go?
We're playing it by ear, so nothing new there. We're really not sure what the next step is going to be. We genuinely are kind of feeling our way along, you know.
Could you foresee a situation where you could actually, you know, be touring and all of that?
It would be difficult because everybody's got lives and everybody's got stuff that's going on. I mean, even having got to this stage was logistically pretty tricky because, you know, trying to drag people out of whatever they were doing.
Did you think you'd get this far when you met up the first time? Yeah.
No, not at all.
Definitely not. I mean, he's not being disingenuous when he, well, he is, but he's not being as disingenuous as he usually is when he says that we don't know what we're doing. I mean, it did kind of happen. We got together in Charles's for some rehearsals about 2 years ago, and we had terrific fun, but we didn't know rehearsals. We ate the best fish and chips in the world in the Magpie, and so it was the Derry exhibition that kicked this bit together, and it was largely about enjoying playing together again. I mean, there definitely is no world plan, whatever, about last time around. As long as someone seems like it might be fun to do, we'll have a go at it. That might include gigs. I doubt if it includes touring in the back of a van, you know, but...
Or carrying your own gear.
It probably includes carrying our own gear.
You were asking earlier on about how we travelled around. I just have a memory in the very early stages, before we got a car or a Range Rover or anything to go around in, coming back, sitting on top of the gear in some kind of a big truck, in the dark, in the back, and O'Connor at some stage. There was great crack going on. There was a couple of young fellas as well who cadged a lift. So there's a good few people kind of chatting in the dark. And O'Connor at some stage, after a little silence, said, "I'm fed up playing refugees. Let's play something else."
and that kind of
spectre hangs over the whole place. Yeah.
What you could do, of course, is do things like festivals and so on, where you can just turn up and plug in. That'd be nice.
Anything goes. Mm-hmm. I think we'd like to do
just something. An idea. We're all... Now we've got you here, let's put some pressure on him. but just please do Bundoran. I was too young then, but I'm old enough now. So, thanks very much for coming in. A real pleasure to be sitting in the middle of a Horslips gig.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, John.
Real something I never thought I'd see, but there it is. And you're going to do another number to play us out.
A mystery number.
Which
we haven't ever done for anyone at all, ever.
Do you need a tin whistle for it, Jim? That's what that is. Are you going to introduce it or just start it?
Just start it.
Go for it. See if you can work out what it is.
So for the first time ever. In how many years?
24?
25 years.
American Trilogy? I didn't think we were doing that.
3, 4.
It's colder than black marble by the sea. My heart is older than the cold oak tree. I am the flash of silver in the sun. If you see me coming, you would better run, run, run from Jared Doom. You speak in whispers of the devils I've slain. By the fire of my silver devil's blade, and still you dare to flaunt yourself at me. I don't want you, I don't need you, I don't love you. Can't you see I'm Jared Doom? And when the stars go out, you can hear me shout. Two heads are better than none. 100 heads are so much better than one. I'm a boy who was born blind to pain, and like a hawk, I swoop and swoop again. I am the flash of Hawkeye in the sun. If you see me coming, you would better run, run, run from Jared Doom. From Jared Doom.
With a razor.
Well, there you go. Thanks to Charles and Johnny and Barry and Jim and Eamon. Thanks to Horslips for coming in and doing a very special event for us here on the Mystery Train. It was such a pleasure. Thanks to Mark McGrath on sound, to Paul Russell and Jim Lockhart on production, and hopefully we'll see Horslips somewhere near you very soon. Good night from the Mystery Train.
The Mystery Train was presented by John Kelly.
John Kelly, you're my moody and mean. You're the hippest young DJ that ever was seen. John Kelly, John Kelly, they thought we were dead, but we got up and did a session instead.
Commercial break.